Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation on South the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is August 1, 2023, or it is the 15th day of April 2027. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Her Kingdom is Coming. From all the dark faces of earth fading races, oh, see how the fixed shadows fly. The voice of salvation awakes every nation, a woman helpless they cry. The kingdom is coming, oh, tell your story. Your banner exalted shall be. The earth shall be full of His knowledge and glory, as waters that cover the sea. The sunlight advancing, our armies advancing, to conquer the kingdoms of sin. Our Yah shall possess them, His presence shall bless them, His beauty shall enter them in. The kingdom is coming, oh, tell their story. Yah's banner exalted shall be. The earth shall be full of His knowledge and glory, the waters that cover the sea. With shouting and singing and jubilant ringing, their arms of rebellion cast down. At last every nation, the Yeshua of salvation, the King and Redeemer shall crown. The kingdom is coming, oh, tell ye the story. Yah's banner exalted shall be. The earth shall be full of His knowledge and glory, as waters that cover the sea.
Two Tommy Green, number 43, we got Vicky Holler. A dead top, an offshoot, or an upshoot, which is the title of our sermon. We've had this before. We're going to have it again. And so Heavenly Father will bless the reading of His Word to open our eyes to where we can see new light, the present truth, and what we're about to read. And that He will help us to find us special place here in this area to set up this everlasting kingdom of heaven that has to have a branch here in this area. So we're praying for it. We're asking Jeff White and them to pray also for our healing here and the setting up of the kingdom here and to start bringing in converts. We have one new convert here that we need everyone that's in this area to come forward. So it says that Vicky Holler says to begin our sermon. He said this is a text of address he gave January 1, 1949. Said all people down through the ages that have ever embraced a fresh message from Yahweh. Were branded as offshoots and considered dangerous, something from which one must beware lest he be shot at, as it were, stabbed, trapped, or something as bad or hard to tell what. As you know, we too are branded as such. And who are the ones that are branding the shepherd's rod as such? It's a general conference. And who were the general conference of Seventh-day Adventists? They're a bunch of Jesuits. They're not even Adventists. And there they were, stolen position in the Adventist Church to take over the Adventist Church. And they were the true officers. And they're the ones in there with the power to condemn then the true prophets when y'all had raised them up to send them to the Adventist people to save their soul. They had those Jesuit General Conference president and his henchmen and there thwarting their work. As you know, we too are branded as such and are accused of leaving the denomination, even as much as were the apostles accused of leaving Judaism and taking up Christianity. Actually, the apostles had left nothing, for they not only took along with them every truth Judaism had, but they went on with the first truth of the Yahweh also. Whereas Judaism fell back, the apostles, moreover, would have remained in the synagogue if the Jews had not driven them out. For this, the apostles were called offshoots or the lot. We likewise have not pulled away from the denomination, but have been cast out of our respective churches and forced to go by another name, Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, and all this for no other reason than for the embracing of the additional heaven-born truth that gives power and force unto the Advent lesson, early writing 277, and which makes us better Seventh-day Adventists than we have been or could otherwise be. Now, if we be offshoot for walking in the light, which heaven sends from time to time for the leading of the Yahweh's people in the way of the truth and righteousness, then I should like to know what our brethren think they themselves are, for by the same token of the logic, the mother denomination, the Seventh-day Adventist, is itself an offshoot from another denomination. Moreover, this is also true of all the prophet denominations, for they are the offshoots of the Catholic, and the apostolic is an offshoot of the Jewish, who then outside of the Jews is not an offshoot. In fact, if we go as far back as Abraham's time, we will find that even the Jews were an offshoot of something before their time. If offshoots are therefore to be shunned, hatred and abhorred, then why are there any Christians at all? And if this is an eye-opener unto those who think themselves something other than an offshoot, they should now without delay apply for the admission into the synagogue, or else begin to behave like Yahweh's men. So I had admission to the synagogue. All right. I'd like to make a correction here now for the first time. B.T. Hardiff is totally wrong with his identity of what an offshoot is. I know this because I dealt with this offshoot on the Facebook with the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists that formed in 1863, that were already members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and they formed Ellen G. White. Her husband, James White, is the one that formed the offshoot of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. Sister White never makes mention of that. She should have. She should have known that, because the Seventh-day Adventist Church is not an offshoot of any denomination. It's dead wrong. She says the Seventh-day Adventist was an offshoot off of the Seventh-day Baptist. Well, she didn't have to say William Miller was an offshoot of the Seventh-day Baptist. But William Miller, they call it First-day Adventist. And William Miller, indeed, that may be a legal term for him, a First-day Adventist, because he was joined with the Seventh-day Adventist, Ellen G. White, in 1844. They met together, and William Miller passed on his message on to Ellen G. White, and then he declined and went back home. So Martin Luther started the first church of the Lutheran Church. That's what he called it, Lutheran Church. In 1500, when he broke off from the Catholic Church, he was a Catholic monk. He found a Bible in the Catholic Church. He read it. He became converted to the doctrine of the just shall live by faith. Romans 1:17, and he became identified as the Lutheran Protestant Church. Okay. So it was a Protestant Reformed doctrine that Martin Luther broke out of the Catholic Church with and formed. Well, Yahweh raised up another messenger in 1543 named John Knox, and with the doctrine of the Holy Spirit, and John Knox was the head of the Presbyterian Church. He had already organized the Presbyterian Church, and the Presbyterian Church was not an offshoot of the Lutheran Church. It connected up to the Lutheran Church and told the Lutheran Church to come and join them, because they had a new doctrine that they needed to join the two doctrines together. And Martin Luther says, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to stay home with our one doctrine of the just shall live by faith. Romans 1:17, Habakkuk 2:2. And so Martin Luther says, well, we'll continue on then with your doctrine, put together with our doctrine of the Holy Spirit. So now we have two doctrines, and we have a new name called Presbyterian, and we're not no offshoot off of you. And then the third church came along, called Smyrna. Anyway, in 1725, the Methodist Church came on the scene with a doctrine of righteousness by grace, the grace doctrine. And John Wesley had that doctrine out of England, and he had the Methodist Church to back him up with it. So you had the Lutheran, Martin Luther, 1500, you had John Knox, 1543, and you had John Wesley, 1725, at the Baptist Church, and he had the doctrine of grace. And the Presbyterian Church said, "Well, we're not going to join your church. We're going to hold on to the two doctrines we have, and we're not going to join you." And so John Wesley's Church Methodist said, "Well, we'll continue on then with all three doctrines. Now we've got three, so we'll just take the three and go on." Well, the Methodist Church was not no offshoot of the Lutheran Church. It was a whole new church that had already organized way back there, maybe even before the Presbyterian Church ever organized. So they took off with three doctrines, and by 1810, Yahweh raised up another messenger, Alexander Campbell, a Baptist, with the doctrine of the baptism by the immersion. And so the Methodist Church says, "Well, we got three doctrines, we don't need no more, and we're not going to accept your doctrine of baptism." And so Alexander Campbell says, "Well, we'll continue on with all four doctrines then, and leave you behind." So the Baptist Church was not an offshoot of the Methodist Church. In other words, Alexander Campbell didn't come out of the Methodist Church. Just like John Wesley of the Methodist Church didn't come out of John Knox's Lutheran Church. And John Knox, the Presbyterian, didn't come out of the Lutheran Church of Luther. So none of them were offshoots. But Beatty Hall says they're offshoots. And said the Adventists came out of the Seventh-day Baptists, and they're offshoots. No. The Seventh-day Adventists came out of the Millerite movement. The First-day Adventists, 1833. They were joined together. Matthew 20, verse 5. William Miller, he had the third movement of the prophecy of Parable of Matthew 20. He was the third movement of the third group of laborers that joined the fourth group of laborers, the fourth movement, Ellen G. White, in 1844. And then Ellen G. White Advent movement was introduced to the Sabbath immediately after the movement started, and they accepted it. And then it took 10 years, though, by 1854, for the Seventh-day Adventist to establish the Sabbath as beginning on the sundown the evening before, and keeping the Sabbath from even to even. It took them 10 years to establish the correct time for keeping it, but they were keeping it up to then. So I just want to clarify this offshoot. This is wrong. Ritchie Hall, he just assumed that, and he set his stakes on it, and he had to stay with it. But I'm correcting it. Okay, so the first church was Ephesus with Paul in the first century. And then the second church was called Smyrna, which was Martin Luther in 1500. He wasn't any offshoot of the apostolic church. He was a monk that broke loose from the Catholic Church in 1500 and formed the Lutheran Church, and was the number two church of the seven. And then you had the John Knox had the Church of Pergamos. And then you had John Wesley had the fourth church, the Baptist, the Methodist Church, and Alexander Campbell. Alexander Campbell had the fourth church, but he had the fifth Reformed doctrine, baptism, And then William Miller had, he had the sixth for prophecy, 2300 day prophecy, 1833, and Ellen G. White had the number seven, the seventh day Sabbath, 1844 movement. Okay, each one of these seven churches succeeded each other, but they were not offshoots from each other. That had to be cleared up. So it says, now, if we be offshoots, but walk in the light, no. It says, let's just start kind of, it says, as you know, we too are branded as such and are accused of leaving the denomination. So he's saying that the shepherd's rod were branded by the Seventh-day Adventists as being offshoots. Well, and all the shepherd's rods were brethren in the Adventist Church with the additional message of hear ye the rod and who hath appointed, Micah 6:9, and that was assigned unto V.T. Hollis to announce it and to declare it back to the Seventh-day Adventist Church that this was a new doctrine since that 1888 disappointment of Righteous by Faith by Jones and Wagner. He is announcing that the doctrine, the refreshed doctrine that was to take the place of Righteousness by Faith by Jones and Wagner in 1888-1890, which the General Conference called the Seventh-day Adventist body of believers to reject in 1890. And we had 40 years of delay, and then Yahweh brought forth a new messenger, D.T. Hollock, with a new message, entitled, I hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed, Micah 6:9. That took the place of Righteousness by Faith doctrine of Jones and Wagner of 1888. And essentially, though, hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed, had more than just Righteousness by Faith doctrine to teach. It had the opening up of the prophecy of Revelation 14:1-5, a disclosing to view the soon coming of the Messiah to harvest 144,000 out of the Adventist Church. So that was what was given to V.T. Hollis to introduce to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, was a new Reformed doctrine to add to Ellen G. White's Reformed doctrine of the Seventh-day Sabbath. D.T. Hollis introduced the whole sanctuary system in 1930 to be restored and put back in its rightful order. Sister White wrote that in 1844 in a Bible commentary book. She said that the sanctuary service, that they went and found, looked for the disappointment in the church. What happened with William Miller's disappointment, found out that the sanctuary is not the earth, that Yahshua is going to come back and burn the earth up with the with fire and take his waiting saints to heaven. He says they thought that the burning of the earth with fire was the cleansing of the sanctuary of Daniel 8:14. And Sister White, after the disappointment was over with Miller, she was shown that it was not that at all. The sanctuary had a place in services found are located in the law of Moses. And so she said that sanctuary has to be restored and put back into its rightful order by us. We're the ones that it has been assigned to accomplish that. Well, Sister White wasn't able to restore the sanctuary fully in her day. The only thing she restored was the seventh-day Sabbath of the sanctuary service. And that's the first statute given in the sanctuary. When you go read Leviticus 23, at verse 1 through 44, the first statute in that Leviticus 23 is the seventh-day Sabbath. And that's the statute Sister White restored. And that's the only one she restored to the sanctuary service. But she said the whole sanctuary service is to be restored and put back in its rightful order. She wasn't able to accomplish it because there wasn't the time for it, her time. And so Vita Hellef announced that it was to continue on restoring that sanctuary. And he didn't add any more to it than just the seventh day of Sabbath. And then Roden succeeded Vita Hellef in 1955, and he proceeded then to restore the rest of the feast days in 1960, Van Roden, and to start having the daily services at the third hour and the ninth hour of the day that the Lord Moses called for. So Van Roden introduced that in 1960. That's the restoration, but he restored those dates out of time and out of season. He didn't have the right creation calendar to set them up right. But he did try to use the Jewish calendar to do it by. But at least he made an effort to restore the feast days and all the statutes and judgments of the sanctuary. But Brother Johnson came along and succeeded Ben Roden in 1970, and he was given the full light on restoring the creation calendar and restoring the sanctuary system and the daily and the ordinary system, called the ordinary system of true worship. And Brother Johnson put that into operation in 1970, and he published the creation calendar showing the true time for keeping each feast day, and he published that calendar for 33 years. And I was with him that whole 33 years that he published that calendar. I witnessed it. So, creation calendar showed that the feast days had all been restored to the Seventh Day Adventist Church by 1970. It was announced in 1844 that it was to be restored, and it took it all the way to 1970. Okay. 125 years it took to restore it from the time it was announced in 1844 until it was completely restored 125 years in the Adventist Church. Now, if we be officers for walking in the light, so Pete tells us, if we shepherd rod, he really should have put that word in there, be officers for walking in the light which heaven sends from time to time to lead Yahweh's people in the way of the truth and righteousness, and I should like to know what our brethren think they themselves are, for they, by the same token of logic, the mother denomination, the Seventh-day Adventist, themselves, and all shoot from another denomination. No, that's where Big Caliph is wrong. The Seventh-day Adventist was not an offshoot from another denomination. The Seventh-day Adventist connected up with the Sixth Church, Philadelphia, with William Miller. It says so. In the Pope Matthew 20, verse 5, it says, the third and ninth hour call laborers. The third hour call laborers was William Miller, and the ninth hour call laborers was the Seventh-day Adventist. Ellen G. White. They were joined together in prophecy. One of them didn't say, yeah, the ninth followed the third. Yeah. Because they connected onto the third's message and put it all together with the ninth message. And it all become one message. And that was called the Five Angels' Messages. William Miller answered, he announced the first three angels' messages, and Ellen G. White announced the last two angels' messages to be joined to the three angels' messages. And she announced that in 1847 in a little tract called A Word to the Little Flock by her and James White, upholding the five angels' messages. Okay. William Miller could only claim announcing three angelic messages. That's all he could claim. Address can only claim the last two, to join to the three, and teach all five. It says, moreover, this is also true of all the prophet denominations, for they are the offshoots of the Catholic, and the apostolic is an offshoot of the Jewish, who then outside of the Jews is not an offshoot. In fact, if we go as far back as the Abraham's time, we will find that even the Jews were an offshoot of something before their time. If offshoots are therefore to be shunned, hated, and abhorred, then why are there any Christians at all? And if this is an eye-opener unto those who think themselves something other than an offshoot, they should not without delay apply for the admission to the synagogue, or else begin to behave like Yahweh's men. Do you, brother, sister, see that if it had not been for the offshoots, for those who had the backbone of their own for the standing up for the present truth, there's that present truth, that's your key to the whole thing. For for another meet in due season, Matthew 24:45, none of us would ever have had a chance to become Christians hyphen Protestants, Adventists, or Davidians. We all would have been members of the God-forsaken synagogue. What God-forsaken synagogue? Is he referring to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the Mother Church? Or not, if of anything, in fact, we would have had no Bible religion at all, for the Jews themselves have departed even from what little they had retained of it 2,000 years ago. Should we then not be thankful for the faithfulness of the officers who have gone before us, if such they be, and of whom Yahshua is the first? I, for one, am proud to be called an officer with my Yahshua. Well, I don't know if that's a correct word to use, proud to use, because the Pharisees give Yahshua this false name. First thing, they had the Greek Orthodox change his name from Yahshua to Christ and Christo and other names. I wouldn't be proud to be called by some new name that my enemy, the Pharisees, had branded on me. I would accept it. I therefore like to be an offshoot, but would dislike to be a dead top. The thing is, the Bible talks about the branches being that grows out of the root of David. It talks about the branch in the Bible, Jeremiah 23:5. One for one, please. So it says, our hostile brethren, though, are mistakenly calling us offshoots. Okay. Rightly, we should be called upshoots. So that is what additional truth does for the church and for anyone who accepts it. A tree that does not put forth an upshoot in the season of it should be either dying or is already dead, plenty. Then, without us upshoots, the brethren will have no chance to survive. There is sin melody and no chance to reach the kingdom of glory. They will, while dying, forever be dreaming of being rich and increased with the glory, increased with the goods, and though in fact Yahshua himself points out that they are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked, Revelation 3:17. And now, and know it not, how thankful they are to be and to us who have withstood their fiery darts for the sake of the truth. In the 20th chapter of Matthew, we find five such upshoots. Would you like to know who these upshoots are for the facilitating of the study of them? I have prepared this chart, and now is your opportunity closely to look at it and faithfully to consider it. This chart is a reproduction of the parable found in the 20th chapter of Matthew, the parable in which Yahshua points out that the householder, Yahweh, in the course of the time hard labored on the five different occasions. Let us now read the parable. It's Matthew 20, verse 1 to 7. For the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning for the hiring laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard, and he went out about the third hour and saw others standing like idle in the marketplace, and said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth and ninth hour, and did likewise. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, Why stand ye here idle? Now they said unto him, Because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. The first laborers were the Jews in the Moses' day. Okay, now that was the ones coming out of Egypt and the first movement for Israel, 1500 B.C. with Moses and Yahshua was that rock in the cloud that followed them. Matter of fact, that rock in the cloud is the one that recruited Moses to go down into Egypt. And they went together with Aaron, his brother, and Miriam, his sister, and they all went down there with a job to do, and that was to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. Now, since the ones that were hired at the third hour were the apostolics, of the apostles, it follows that the day, the 12 allegorical hours of the parable in which the hiring is actually carried out, is symbolical of a period of time. It is the time in which the written word of Yahweh, the Bible, appears and shines directly to mankind, the period since Moses' death. Inasmuch as the first laborers, the Jews, were the ones hired early in the day Moses began to write the Bible, the light from Yahweh, and caused it to shine upon the world, brought the day, the word early, therefore implies that the period which preceded the appearance of the Bible is the parabolical light when there was no Bible on earth. There was no direct spiritual light, but only indirect moon fashion. Finally, then, the period before the Moses and the period after Moses, the period without the Bible and the period with the Bible complete the cycle of the 24 symbolical hours on which the Yahshua based his parable, and of which this chart, page 6, is a reproduction. It says, we have now seen that the absence of the Bible light before the Moses' time caused the time to be symbolized by the night, and the presence of the Bible light since Moses' time caused that period to be called a day. For the first group of the laborers being the Jews, and the second, the apostolic creed, the next three calls consequently point to other three groups in the antitypical apostolic era in the last days. Since 1833, who have been commissioned to go into the vineyard. There, they are to preach something as original as was the ceremonial system of the worship which Moses preached, and also as original as the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension of the Yahshua, which the apostles preached. For the message of the one must be comparable unto the message of the other. That is, if the first two messages were original, the last three must also be original. For the only such original message given after the preaching of the apostles is the 2300 prophetic days of the Daniel 8:14, it being first preached by the First Day Adventist, the Millerites movement, 1833 to 1844. Soon after 1820, that's when that came on the scene, the Great Controversy, page 331. And being the third message in the line of the parabolical calls for the servants shows that in the stream of the parabolic time, the hour struck 6 in 1820 A.D., it says, the next call for service to preach something just as new and as original came in the year of 1844. It was a cleansing of the sanctuary after the 2300-day prophecy. Let's do that again. For the next call for the servants for the preaching something just as new and as original came in the year of 1844. It was the cleansing of the sanctuary after the 2300 prophetic days were passed and was preached in the connection with the Seventh-day Sabbath. For the group of the servants called themselves Seventh-day Adventists, for they proclaim fear Yahweh and give glory unto Him, for the hour of His judgment is come, and worship Him that made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of the waters. Revelation 14:7. All right, it says, for the ninth parabolic hour, therefore, struck with the rise of the Seventh-day Adventist, 1844. But the fact that there is another call for the servants, that of the 11th hour, that's who we are, and we're called the fifth movement, the last, points out that after the message of 1844, there is to be another such original message. And Elijah David has that message and that movement of the call at the 11th hour, the fifth and last call for a prophetic movement in the earth by the house of Israel, I might add, and also a new group of the servants to proclaim it. This message, the 11th hour message, moreover, is to be the layman's message, movement. For the laborers were found idle and in the search of the employment in the marketplace. For the marketplace, where the master is said to have gone after such employment seekers, is the church for the assurance season. His servants only from among the well-informed people. Should we be reminded again and again that in the introduction of the each message, the householder was compelled to hire new servants from among the laity, and did not the ministers always stand aloof, doing all they could to prevent others from coming in touch with the messages? What a weighty thought. What a responsibility rests upon the brethren who are now shepherding the flock. Before the question, why stand ye all the day idle? Is very definitely saying that those who are hard are not of those who were already at work. Not of the ministry. So, I was hard because I was standing idle in 1970. Brother Johnson was the active ministry at the time, and he was of the Esau ministry. And Yahshua is the one that came and hired me, and typical Jacob, and the ministry, Esau's ministry, is already at work. And the answer, because no man has hired us, makes it emphatic that the 11th hour workers, as it's called at the beginning of the 11th hour, are of the faithful laity of those who are anxiously waiting to serve the Yahshua, but who previously have not been given the opportunity. As this last message, Inspiration warned the denomination by leaving on record the lines which I shall now read. I saw, says the Sister White, angels hurrying to and fro in heaven, descending unto the earth, and again ascending into heaven, preparing for the fulfillment of some important event. And I saw another mighty angel commission to descend to the earth, to unite his voice with the third angel and give power and force unto his message. This message seemed to be an addition to the third angel's message of the fourth movement, because this last message is a message of the fifth movement at the 11th hour, whereas the third angel was a movement of the fourth, of the ninth hour. Matthew 20, verse 5. This message seemed to be an addition unto the third message, joining it as the midnight cry joined the second angel's message in 1844. Early writing 277. And what should that message be if not an urgent preparation for the judgment of the living? Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah, and when he appears, men may say, "You are too earnest. You do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your message." Testimonies of Ministries, page 475. If you wish to study the parable and all of its detail, you may do so by the reading of the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2, 222-239. Now you see that the so-called offshoots, Yahshua himself called Yahweh's servant. We can therefore honestly and sincerely ask, can the church and the world get along without the unpopular offshoot? Well, the answer is simple. If they could have gotten along without the early hour servant and without the servants of the third, sixth, and ninth hours, then the church and the world could get along without the 11th hour servant, the so-called offshoots too, but in such a sad condition, what would the world be like? Moreover, since the announcement of the separation of the saints from the sinners originates with the 11th hour servants, and that would be the last ones called to work in the vineyard, and that would be the fifth group, Matthew 20, verse 6, those that called at the end of the 11th hour to work in the 12th and last parabolic hour, the judgment of the living and the harvest time. And since they are to cry aloud and say, "Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean." Isaiah 52:1. And also to say, "Behold, upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off." Nahum 1:15. For it follows that with out the 11th hour message, and that's our message, House of David, in the 12th hour, and servants, talking about the message and its servants, the church Zion would be left sleeping forever, never to behold the feet of him who brings these good tidings, of him who publishes peace, and never to put on her beautiful garments, never to be fitted for the kingdom. I say that if left in such an unhappy and unholy state, the very elect, 144,000, would forever remain unclean and unsanctified, this seed, and since the 11th hour servant, I'm going to call it right, the branch Davidians, which that's who we are, Elijah David's house is a branch Davidian, are the ones under whom the message of this cleansing, the judgment of the living, is committed. Then, those who on account of it are our enemies, those who are doing everything they can to keep the common people ignorant of the truth and from coming in contact with it are the very ones who are endeavoring to deceive the very elect. That's the 144,000. If possible, thank Yahweh, it is impossible. We should therefore now proclaim these good tidings of the peace, even with a greater zeal than ever, for the command of the Yeshua, say unto the house of Israel, the church, the Seventh-day Adventist church, thus saith Yeshua, I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which ye have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Yeshua, says Yeshua, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes, for I will take you from among the heathen and get you out of all the countries and will bring you into your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them, and you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Yahweh. Ezekiel 36:22-28. This brings in verse 36 hour contact just at the 11th hour calling us, number 11, click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. The way of the cross leads home. And I must needs go home by the way of the cross. There's no other way but this. I shall never get tired of the gates of life, it's the way of the cross I'm in. And the way of the cross leads home. The way of the cross leads home. It is sweet to know there's a unwed girl. The way of cross leads home. I must needs go on in the blood sprinkled way, the path that the Savior trod. If I ever climb to the heights sublime, when the wrestle is at home with you, the way of the cross leads home. The way of the cross leads home. It is sweet to know it on with God. The way of the cross leads home. And I've been farewell to the way of the road, to walk in it nevermore. For my hour has come, and I seek my home, three ways at the open door. The way of the cross is home. The way of the cross is home. It's sweet to know that I'm with God. The way of the cross is home.